welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am IndyStar Colts insider Jim Halo, and I am joined, as always, by fellow insider and co-host Joel A. Erickson. Joel, I can't remember. Is it insider and co-host or co-host and insider?
I have no idea. I thought you did fine there.
I did do good. I did. I'm just saying. Like, I was in the shower this morning. I'm like, which one do I usually go? So, I don't know.
I don't know, Jim. You shouldn't be thinking about that in the shower. You're way in your head.
I know. I told you. It happens. Speaking of in your head, this is a great transition. Jonathan Taylor. I think he's in his own head. That's what I think. But we're going to get into that in a minute because I wrote a story about how I think the Colts committed two backbreaking mistakes that ultimately cost them a game. I think they could have won, honestly. I think they were playing better than the Ravens in the first two quarters, probably. And then you wrote a story about how the defense pretty much should have won and deserved better from its offense. So they lose 24-10. And again, it was one of those games where I guess the place we should start is who are the Colts? Because this is the game we were like, this is a statement game. Like, if this is going to tell us who they are against the legit AFC contender, we're going to know who they are now. What do you know now that you didn't know before this game started?
It's the same. I think they're the same. They're a playoff caliber team that has, but they're not part of the AFC elite. And the fact that they're playoff caliber doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to make the playoffs.
I think,
given the schedule,
for two quarters, I thought this was a real team.
They looked really good for two quarters, I thought. The fumble obviously was a big deal, but other than the fumble, I mean, they really sort of dominated the Ravens.
I mean, offensively, they even moved the ball.
Well, the fumble, in addition to giving them 7 points, essentially, like, put the clamps on the offense for some reason. It just took all the air out of the balloon, it felt like.
Agree. And then the interception a little bit later was part of that debacle that was the third quarter. And that really just kind of sucked the life out of the Colts at that point. I think where I thought they were. Like, maybe not good enough to beat the Ravens. Even though I should say, I kind of thought they were going to win today. I know you didn't. I kind of thought that they were going to muster enough offense and not do those stupid things that shoot themselves in the foot.
I didn't feel like it after the third. I felt like halfway through the third quarter, it just felt like the game was had gotten away.
Oh, no, for sure. I meant before the game that I thought this was going to be
before the game, yeah.
Just because I thought the injuries, Ronnie Staley's defensive line, which, again, like, defensively, it played out the way I think you and I both thought, which is this Colts defensive line proved it's I don't know, one of the top two or three best in the NFL?
It's pretty good. No one does that to the, like, I was looking through it for my story. The Colts held the Ravens 2.9 yards per carry. That's the lowest anybody's held them to since the start of the 2019 season.
Yeah.
Which in my mind is sort of like the unveiling of, like,
that's like the beginning, yeah.
Powered Lamar.
Well, that's the new offense they unveiled with him.
The 266 yards they held the Ravens to was like the third fewest over that span.
They pretty much ran for that much, for that many yards against the Steelers last week.
Yeah.
Just rushing.
The defense, really, I think the defense is legit.
Yeah, I think it might be elite. Like, that was an elite rushing game or team they faced and shut it down.
Well, the question is, like, what happens when they go up against Rodgers in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, I think elite passing
offense. More so than Tennessee, really.
Elite passing offense will give them more trouble than elite running offense, for sure. But again, like, I'm ready to put them in the top five of defenses pretty comfortably at this point.
Well, and I keep comparing them to, like, last year's Niners or something, but in reality, that's not really what the top five defenses are this year. I mean, it's Pittsburgh, it's Baltimore, maybe Chicago.
Chicago's in there, yeah, Tampa.
I don't know if there's any, like, truly, like, game in, game out dominant defense this year. Although the Ravens might be, honestly.
Yeah.
The Ravens actually might be.
I know.
One of the things we're going to have to keep in mind as we talk about this and talk about how bad the offense was is that the Ravens have essentially shut down every offense they've played with the exception of the Chiefs.
Who is their kryptonite.
Who is their kryptonite and who also has the game's best quarterback. So.
Right. You actually pointed this out to me. I want to make sure people know because I think a lot of people back home are like, well, the Steelers scored 28 points against them. So what are you talking about? It's actually misleading. Like, they scored 28 points, but it was on four Lamar turnovers.
They had 221 yards.
And they didn't gain any yards, exactly. So I thought I just wanted to point that out.
221 yards is
bad.
Like 100 less than the Colts, 100 fewer than the Colts had. So the turnovers loomed large last week. I think sometimes you see just the scores and the results, and you just assume that their defense didn't play well. But that's a pretty good defense. Even without Marlon Humphrey, that's a really good defense.
I agree. I guess I'm coming back to that question. Is I I think they can hang with AFC elites. If the Ravens are, again, I think that maybe the Chiefs are probably ahead.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the thing with why I think that they can't, why I think they don't match up with the AFC elite. All three of the teams that I consider to be elite in the AFC, which is Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Kansas City.
Right.
All three of those teams have really good defenses. And I don't think we've seen enough from the Colts offense to know that they can beat a good defense. Like, really beat them. They've played two this year. They've scored 19 points against the Bears. They scored 10 today. The Chiefs, I don't think, have an elite defense, but the Chiefs defense can play like one.
No, they're good enough.
The Chiefs defense can play like one sometimes. And I think if you get in that game, some of the issues the Colts have against decent defenses is becomes problematic.
So let's talk about the offense then, because I think like that's the part, like you said, where they're like their defense matches up. It belongs in the AFC elite conversation. The offense clearly doesn't. Let's talk about Jonathan Taylor and what the hell is going on there with the Colts and what the hell is going on with him. So he puts the ball on the ground. It's a bad fumble. I wrote about it today. I think it's more inexcusable. Maybe people think it's less inexcusable against the Ravens team that's forced 14 going into the game. But to me, that's like you're aware then. You know they're coming for the ball. You know they're coming for you. You have to protect the ball. And to put it on the ground there, like I said, at that point of the game where they're driving, you go up more than – I mean, they're up 7-0 already. And they're
up 7-0 and they're past midfield. Past midfield. That ball is like they're on like the third.
It's a 65-yard return. So yeah, 35.
They're in field goal range already for Blankenship.
Exactly.
With a first down.
So it cost the Colts at least a 10-point swing, if not 14. So again, you had a chance to really go up on the Ravens and put Lamar in a position where we've all read about, which is if you force him to drop back and throw, he's not very good. Mm-hmm. Especially when they're down big.
Although he was in the third quarter.
Yeah, he wasn't good. But again, I still think the Colts would have been in a better position. I don't think it's true. They would have been in a better position if they're up 10-0 or 14-0 as opposed to tied 7-7. And I just, that fumbled to me. Again, I know he hasn't fumbled all year, and I know it's the Ravens, and the Marcus Peters is really good at it, but it was a backbreaker. And the Colts clearly seem to think that way, too, because they pretty much phased him out of the game plan after that.
They don't appear to have faith in him at all, I don't think.
Yeah, which flies in the face of what Frank Reich said today. I want you to kind of give your analysis of that situation, because after what Frank said today was, listen, we script plays for everybody. And that there was never a mandate on the headset for me to telling Tom Rathman or whoever everybody else that take him out of the game. Like, that's not what was said. That's what Frank said. And then they still have confidence in him and they still want to give him the ball. But that's not what we saw.
Well, that's what we haven't seen.
2 weeks in a row.
We haven't seen it 2 weeks in a row.
Correct.
He had one carry in the second half against the Lions. He had one carry after the fumble today. One touch. He didn't even have a catch after the fumble. And it was because Wilkins was hurt. You don't have faith in a guy if he has fumbles one time and you pull him.
Should they have faith in him?
Let me put it this way. Jordan Wilkins didn't play well enough today to be like, oh, we can definitely roll with him and don't have to worry about Taylor. I mean, the running game wasn't good.
No.
Actually, the running game was better before Taylor's fumble.
No doubt. And they ended up running weirdly. Weirdest stat of the game, I think, to me, is that they outrushed the Ravens today. 112 to 110.
Well, Taylor had two good runs. DeMichael Harris had two good runs. Yep. They had some push going before that fumble. And then after that, Wilkins just wasn't very good at creating his own yards after that. And even so, they still went away from Taylor.
Yeah. So where does this put Taylor going forward? It seems like they say they have confidence. I think they put him out there to start again after last week. And he looked pretty good until the fumble. My guess is that they put him out there to start again next week.
I mean, do they? Like, they've given up on him immediately, like 2 weeks in a row. They've just completely given up on him at all.
I think what we need to figure out is who is doing the quitting, honestly. Because, again, Frank said we didn't lose faith in him. There was no purposeful intention of taking him out. But one touch, somebody made that call.
The way they're handling him is so different than what they're saying. And we're going to try to pin that down if we can. It's tough given Frank's positivity.
Yeah, he'll protect anybody. I mean, that's what he does.
But the way they're handling him right now says they don't have any faith in him.
So we talked about this a little bit before the podcast. And I say, does he deserve to have faith in him? What do you want to do with him going forward? He did show some flashes. Like, again, I think Detroit, he was objectively not good. I think today he showed some flashes of being the guy that they wanted him to be.
Yeah, well, he still hasn't had the big breakout runs that you saw at Wisconsin, but it felt like they were starting to felt like it was coming today, actually. I really thought, like, I remember sitting there, like, right before the fumble and thinking, okay, the running game's actually decent today. They've got some push. He's hitting the hole pretty hard.
What I will say is that first, like, he had two big runs. The second one was the fumble. It was a good run. But the first one, to me, felt like more of a scripted, like,
yeah, the first
benefit.
One was more, the first one was more of a play call than a good run.
And he, again, failed. This is where I am on Jonathan Taylor. I still think he's very talented. I still think the upside's high. But, like, he has continued to not make people miss in the open field. And I thought he had an opportunity today on that first play, that pitch, to make a corner or a safety miss and just ended up getting tackled.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be – he never really was a juke guy at Wisconsin. It's more the speed exploiting holes, I think.
So there's not as much – yeah, I mean, so there's not a lot of wiggle
tackles
there.
Yeah.
Well, that's like – that's a little disappointing in the open field then. Because, he can run people over and has.
But yeah, I don't necessarily know that there's like a ton of like – you're not going to see a ton of like super like jump – like juke-y type stuff.
Well, I don't want it to be Kamara. I just – you got to make a – I mean, again,
Kamara's not really juke-y. Kamara just breaks tackles.
Then he's got to do it that way. Because to me, if you're going to be an NFL caliber running back, you just got to make people – you got to make people miss one way or the other. And I don't care how you do it.
I don't know. I'm just not ready to give up on him after 8 games.
I'm not giving up on him either.
The Colts seem ready to give up on him after 8 games.
Well, not really, right? Because all I will say is that after game 7, they put him right back out there.
And then pulled him
after the fumble. No, after the fumble.
I've never been you just give up on a player after a fumble type of person. And especially when it's their first one in like 120 touches
for
this season. And he was fighting for extra yards. It wasn't like he got it punched out, but it wasn't like it was like – I didn't feel like it was like – he's just being loose with the football. He slipped a little bit, and they were like, okay, well, we're just not going to put you back in, which it just feels like the Colts don't have faith in him. The thing is, we've asked, I think the frustrating thing is we asked Tom Rathman 2 weeks ago during the bye, there was a lot of questions.
Yeah, about Jonathan Taylor and his
Jonathan
development.
Taylor,
yeah.
And whether or not he was playing well enough and whether or not he was seeing it well enough. And Rathman is the kind of guy who will criticize a little bit. He has been in the past. He didn't really do it. He defended him kind of vehemently and then immediately pulled him out of games just twice in a row. So there's a real disconnect here. I think it's frustrating for fans. I think it's frustrating for us. Just like, you don't have to say he's like, you don't have to say you've given up on him completely as a player, but just, it's okay to say like, we're not sure about him right now.
You know what's wild is Frank Reich's leashes. Like, Evan Vinatieri misses 100 kicks. Leashes is like immeasurable. Jonathan Taylor puts the ball on the ground, out. Like, he can go from 0 to 100 in the leash thing. And again, I'm not even totally sure it's Frank. But I think it might, you know, like we talked about.
Well,
the reason
you're saying that is just, you know, to give readers full disclosure, is that Frank kind of said Tom like handles that stuff, but I mean, either way, like, you'd think Frank would notice that 28 had not like been on the field at all.
Yeah, we noticed. we kept looking, going, where is he? He'd go out there occasionally for a snap and then come right back off.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say at this point, halfway through his rookie season, that it's been a disappointing rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say the Colts are clearly disappointed since they're giving up on him quickly in games. I don't know what that means going forward. I just don't. I mean, Marlon Mack, people didn't like after his first season too. So you probably shouldn't give up on a player halfway through their rookie season.
But, and they didn't, right? I mean, they let Marlon keep figuring it out.
But it's clear that right now I shouldn't say it's clear. It feels like right now that the Colts don't have any faith in it.
Well, there is a difference, right? Because Marlon kind of was working through while the team was working through. Like, what are we? And then we heard today Frank Reich say, I believe we have the personnel to win it all. He said that flat out. We can win it all with this personnel. So I think he's not, I mean, there's no, if you're struggling, if you're not helping us, you're out right now. There's no, like, development curve right now. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm thinking roster-wide.
I know, but it's just like, the hard thing for me to square is that it's not like they have a backup playing great.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Wilkins hasn't played great football.
No, I agree with you. I'm just meant in terms of the mentality.
He's like, you need someone to step forward in that running game. No one really has yet. And to me, you would keep going with both of them. I think Taylor's had more good games than Wilkins has so far.
Yeah.
And so I would think you keep trying those guys until someone takes hold of the job. And I haven't seen that, and yet they're still going away from Taylor right away.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... we're going to have to ask Frank about it more and see what he says. And especially on short rest, I mean, he's not going to get a chance to much... Like, he said he's going to watch tape, but, like, what you saw against Baltimore, it might be what you just see against Tennessee, because there's not a lot of practice to be had in between time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a confusing situation to me.
So where were you on because we can talk about the defense, and we will, because you guys need positive things in your life. But
I don't think they want them, though, I would guess.
Well, that's why we're leading with the bad.
I would guess the fans don't want the positive things.
Well, Philip Rivers, I didn't think he was miserable today. I know that some of the numbers say he was. 56% completion percentage was not very good. He threw the pick, no touchdowns. Like, overall, it wasn't, like, statistically, it wasn't a very good game for him. However, if you kind of take away the pick, which, by the way, like, we'll get into this, Rivers thought... And again, I think all of you guys listening thought it was an interception. I don't know many people who think it was an interception.
Just from looking at my Twitter timeline, which is basically just entirely made up of NFL writers and national people who cover football, like, I didn't see a single person go, yeah, I think that's an interception.
I think what Philip Rivers said today, and you guys, I'm sure you guys have heard it, was essentially anybody that's ever played the game of football or watched football doesn't think that's a catch. Al Riveron disagrees.
Al Riveron said it was clear and obvious, which was wild to me.
I didn't see that when I watched it, and neither did Philip Rivers. I think his point is like perfectly taken on this. If you slow things down slow enough, you can make it look a catch.
That's my thing. I feel like slowing it down here takes something out of the play. Okay. Because they said he made two or three steps. Well, they're not real steps. They said he made a football move. He didn't really make a football move. He just stepped backwards. Like,
when did he have control of the ball? Is my point.
I have no idea.
Like, at what point was he like firmly in control?
It seemed like he was moving around the whole time.
I still don't know what a catch is.
It was a bad throw by Rivers. He said it himself.
So we'll pivot to that again. Interception or not, he never should have put that ball up, especially against one like Marcus Peters, who's a ball hawk.
I don't have a problem with him throwing it if the ball goes to his outside shoulder.
Yes, you're right. A bad throw, I should say. Yeah.
It's just a bad throw. Rivers has done this with Marcus Johnson before, where he throws when the defensive back's not looking. But he just said it's a poor throw. He threw it underthrew it and threw it too far to the inside, which gave Peters a chance to make a play on it. If you give Marcus Peters a chance to make a play on a football,
he's gonna.
Yeah. So.
By the way, Marcus Peters apparently told Philip Rivers he didn't think he had it. He said the guy who didn't catch it said he didn't catch it. So. Rivers, I mean, Peters didn't say that in the post game, but apparently.
But of course, but why would Peters say that in the post game? Exactly. He'd never say that stuff in the post game.
Rivers said he didn't catch it, so there's that. Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
But I don't know.
But beyond that, Rivers, it is an interception, and it just was just killer for the Colts.
It was, and I didn't. The thing was, when he let the ball go, I didn't hate the idea of taking a shot there because they hadn't really been able to push the ball down the field at all.
Not at all.
Frank Reich said they were trying to take advantage of Marcus Peters and his gambling, which, as you pointed out on the preview podcast, he does have a tendency to do.
He does.
I didn't hate them taking the shot there. It's just a bad throw.
You had a few of those today.
Overall, but overall, there were some. I mean, there was some good there too. There's a couple. There was one throw he made on the run, which is wild.
Yeah, to Pittman, like almost cross body. Yeah, like, it was a great throw. Yeah, the one he zipped into Mo'Ali Cox about 17 yards downfield, I thought was a hell of a throw.
He had some weird escapes today. He didn't get sacked or hit, and a couple times it was because he actually like bought time with his feet. Uh-huh. Which I kept looking at you to think, see if you fell out of your chair.
He was watching Lamar and was like, you know what? Why don't I start doing that? God, good idea, Lamar.
I don't know. It wasn't a good game, but it wasn't like this isn't like a game. I keep seeing people on Twitter who are like, "Well, they should bench him," and I'm like, "Why?
No,
this is just dumb."
He really wasn't like awful today. He just that pick, ended up being a pick. And the problem was, you talked about this third quarter. I think you wrote about it in the numbers thing that we co-do. But like the problem for that pick was that it came after a very long Ravens drive that ended with a fumble from the Buckner force, which was great. Mm-hmm. But then it put him right back on the field. It was the second play. Mm-hmm. And then they were right back on the field exhausted, and they drive. I think that was another 10-play drive for a mm-hmm. touchdown.
And then they immediately went 3 and out.
I would say 3 and out. They gained the 1 yard. And then it's another 14-play drive for the Ravens, and then the game's over. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a series of, like, even though, okay, yeah, question the interception, whatever, it happened. And it happened at, like, the worst possible time.
Well, you talk about playing complimentary football, and Frank Reich and the defenders, to Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner, sort of pushed back on the idea that, like, you know, the defense deserved to win, but they did. And part of it is, like, you get that big fumble from Buckner on the goal line.
Huge.
You gotta do more than just throw a pick or have a three and out. You gotta do something with that. Like, even if it's just get to midfield.
Yep.
Like, they gave you a huge play. They kept them from scoring after this big drive. You gotta do something there.
That was a big goal line stand.
They score the touchdown, you really have to do something to get them, because they've been on the field now for an entire quarter. And it's just the offense didn't give them any help there in the second half. They didn't give them any chance to regroup.
Nope.
The Ravens came out and started throwing kind of this quick hitting passing game over the middle.
They actually were hurrying up too. Lamar said he thought that worked.
Instead of having a chance to sit and talk about it and figure out what adjustment to make, the defense was right back on the field immediately because of the interception. So I just thought the offense played terrible complimentary football. I mean, they didn't play good football at all anyway, but they played terrible complimentary football in the second half. And I think that contributed to the defense, which even with that, I thought the defense played really well.
As you guys know, I grew up watching Chicago Bears football. I cannot tell you how many times I have watched a defense give up points in those exact situations because the offense can't hold on to the ball. And there's only so much a good defense can do over and over and over and over again, especially against a really good Ravens offense. Like, it just, you can't ask them to be perfect. Like,
well, and the thing was, they even when they were giving up yards and points, they were playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. They only gave up two explosive plays today at all. There were a 21-yard passing play and a 20-yard passing play, which is the very lowest end of the explosive passing play. The longest run the Ravens had was 9 yards.
Yep.
If you've watched any Ravens games over the last year and a half, you know how wild that is. And so, I don't know. It was just hard for me. I give Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner's mentality a lot of credit for getting on there and saying, like Darius Leonard said, we did okay in the first half after they held them to 55 yards on 25 plays, which is insane.
It was crazy. They had 18 rushing yards in that first half. It was nuts.
I give them credit for their mentality and thinking that way, but us being removed and not having to think that, like, the defense played by far well enough to win today.
I know that Lamar hasn't been great this year or whatever, but you held a pretty good, if not great, offense to 17 offensive points.
Well, they were scoring 29 points a game.
Right.
I mean, I know
people are down on them too, and I was like, they're pretty good still. Like, I know they're not putting up like ridiculous numbers.
They
like
still have the number one rush offense in football.
Yep. Like, and they held them to 17 offense. I've always been of the belief if you hold a team to below 20, you should win. That's just
100%.
Below 20, and they gave up again.
Unless there's a blizzard outside.
Right, exactly. But the defense did more than enough in my mind to win. Like I said, they gave up 17 offensive points, and they shouldn't have even given up that much if the offense had done anything to help them stay off the field and stay fresh. So, you know what we should talk about? We talked about the fumble, and we glossed over it. We'll get to the good part now. Philip Rivers tripping over himself and doing a half gainer over the getting turf monstered, and then laying like a turtle afterward. It was among the funnier things. That I know people aren't probably in the mood to laugh, Colts fans, but man, was that funny. Do yourself a favor and watch that replay, because it was very funny. Now, the real question is, Joel and I disagree about this. Go watch the replay and tell me if Philip Rivers stands his ground and does an old man trip everywhere. Is that a touchdown? Does he get in the way enough to make a play, or does another Colt come back and make a play? Mo Ali Cox dove, unfortunately, right before that. And if he hadn't, I think he might have caught him. Because he still has to jump over Philip Rivers' turtle body flailing at him.
That might have been even worse than that, because then, like, he would have fallen and Mo Ali would have hit this guy in the air over Rivers' body, and then Mo Ali and the guy would have fallen on Rivers, and then it's just a whole new set of issues.
I would say that would be a problem, but Rivers is unbreakable, as we know.
That's true.
He's the Bruce Willis character.
I don't think he's making that play.
Okay, listen.
Have you seen him move?
There's ways not to make a play, and there are ways to not make a play, and he really, really did not make a play. That was like Peyton Manning would have just, like, fallen over. Philip tried, and that was the problem.
I know. It's really remarkable that at some point he ran close to a 5-second 40-yard dash.
It's remarkable. We were talking about this before. That he was recruited by a Division I college, a good one, to play tight end. Like, yeah. it's just insane.
Yeah, he was.
But there it is. He's
like at the same time, like, that they were about to go 13-0. Auburn was about to go 13-0, like, right around that time.
He's a long way from being a college safety with that tackling effort.
Well, now we know how bad they would have gone for it.
He would not be the, you know, borderline Hall of Fame candidate at safety, that is for sure.
Funny story, I did that once in a basketball game.
Tripped over yourself?
I was backpedaling, like the only person on a fast break, and totally biffed it. Did, like, you, right in front of everybody.
Did you throw your limbs up and flail at the guy?
No, I tried to do the thing where you, like, flip back over and land on your feet, but by then they'd already scored. I did land on my feet, but they'd already scored. It was very embarrassing.
It happens. Like you said, you trip. And again, I actually don't think he's, like, so unathletic that he can't manage it. I think he just tripped, but it was still really funny.
Well, the problem is when you're 38 and you don't move very well, you just can't trip. It just can't happen.
It just looks... Yeah, exactly.
Because the memes will just get terrible.
I can't tell you guys how much we needed the Colts to win after that play. Because then we could have asked them and teased him about it. It would have been fun.
Yeah, because he's really good when you tease him.
Right.
Like he's kind of fun about it.
It would have been good time. And maybe Nate, this week he'll lighten up enough to talk about. Not that he should. Again, it's a bad play. It's a bad play that he probably doesn't want to talk about.
And it really turned the game. That's the second time this year that a turnover has really changed the course of a game.
The
Jacksonville one was the interception. They were rolling in that one. This one, I felt like they were rolling, and then the fumble changed it.
They're just not a good enough offense, is what I wrote. They're just not a good enough offense to overcome massive mistakes like that. They just
not
don't
against
have
a good team.
Not against
they
a good
do,
defense.
You can do that against a bad defense.
Right, the Bengals, they came back 21, whatever, but like they just don't have the firepower. Like, we just talked about the problem running game, and it's not just the backs, it's the line, too. They also, I refer to them as this lovingly, but they're a scotch-taped-together wide receiver core right now. You're talking about Zach Pascal, Marcus Johnson, DeMichael Harris. These are all undrafted guys.
I thought this was the first game that Marcus Johnson looked overmatched too.
Yeah.
There was one very clear, like, deep ball opportunity that Rivers was very clearly not happy with the way he ran.
He was wide. He was open too. Like if they get in sync on that, it's a touchdown.
Because Rivers doesn't do this very often. Actually, you don't actually. Like, this might be the first time I've really noticed him, like, look at the sideline and say, like, where. I think on TV, I think somebody told me that they said, "Where's he going?"
That makes sense. He went the opposite direction of the ball.
Yeah.
Like, so.
But the Rivers immediately looks at the sideline, starts gesturing with his hands, like, where is he going? I thought there were a couple others. I thought there was another. Well, it was late in the game, but he tried to go back shoulder, and Johnson just didn't see it at all.
It was like not even close.
And it was the right throw because the guy had position on him. I felt like there was some times this. I felt like there were some times today that their inexperience at receiver really, really showed up.
Well, so we again, I think you and I both love the Zach Pascal person and what he contributes to the team, but asking him to be any more than a three is probably asking too much.
I thought the only encouraging things that you could see out of the offense today were Michael Pittman.
Michael Pittman looked good. He ran some really good routes.
Maybe not perfect, but like 4 catches for 56 yards looked really good on those catches.
Yep.
Also looked pretty good after the catch.
I was going to say, he broke a couple tackles, created some extra yards. I was excited to see that for him.
And then the other one that's just really intriguing to me is DeMichael Harris.
Yeah, I still think that's a gadget thing, but it has a place on this offense.
The biggest thing is, like, it is a gadget thing, and I think that's why it's interesting to me. Because he's not going to be, like, a big-time guy for them.
Right.
But, like, if you watch Green Bay's doing this a little bit with Tyler Irvin right now.
Yeah.
The Bears tried to do it with Cordero Patterson a little bit. Trying to think of another good example. There are some offenses where you can use that guy really, really well. And I thought they used DeMichael Harris really well today.
I think the Panthers have been doing some weird stuff with Curtis Samuel. That might be one. But again, he's a different kind of athlete.
He really kind of opened up the running game a little bit early because they could get the ball to him on a handoff. It's the stuff that we're supposed to see Paris Campbell do. And it's more effective, honestly, if Paris Campbell's in there because Paris Campbell can be on the field more often.
I like when you do those, like, I especially like when you do those kind of, like, reverse EV or, like, jet sweep plays early in a game because then you get a linebacker thinking, like, okay, can't oversell to stop X, Y, and Z. And so I like when they do that early. I will say, though, to the effect of those kinds of plays, the Colts went to a lot of quick screens, quick throws today, and it just, man.
Very clearly worried about the pass rush. Yeah. And I think with some reason.
Yeah, it wasn't that it was a bad idea. It just didn't really work.
I think with reason, I think that you saw that the pass rush
Baltimore's pass rush did okay today. It's always weird to talk about this because the Colts didn't give up a sack or a hit, so it seems like they didn't do that well. But I felt like there was some pressure, so I think they were trying to mitigate that a little bit. I thought that the receiver inexperience showed up today. Little trouble getting the tight ends involved, other than Moelle Cox. Jack Doyle got, but even before that,
true.
And on that throw, they weren't. Jack Doyle has never really been in sync with Rivers this year.
No. Trey has at times.
Doyle really hasn't. I almost thought that, like, I don't know what they said on the broadcast, so you guys will have to tell us. But I thought that was just an egregious miscall. I think that should be a fine.
I think it might be. Well, I don't know.
Big fine.
Usually the fines come for direct helmet to helmet, and this wasn't. It's certainly a penalty.
Definitely defenseless receiver.
I agree with that. And but he didn't get him with his head.
And my other issue with it is, this was not a situation where Doyle was coming across the middle and crouched down into it. He was up in the air, and the guy launched. The guy's launch angle was he aimed for the upper body.
He did.
That's the problem for me.
It was
you aim for the upper body and you got head because you aimed up.
I will only say that he did turn his body till it was the shoulder and not the head.
Yeah, you still can't hit their head.
I agree. I just mean he wasn't targeting in a college term. He wasn't targeting, but I also do think that it was shouldn't have been a penalty. There's no doubt about that.
I think sometimes the targeting rule and the fact that the NFL doesn't have one confuses people because they think targeting when they see that play.
Yeah.
That's not targeting. What that is defenseless receiver.
I agree. And I think it should have been called. I completely agree with you there. I just think, it wasn't as bad just because he didn't go crown of the helmet to Jack, but he still got hit in the head with his shoulder.
I think to me it's still a pretty reckless play because of where he aimed. You can't aim where he aimed.
That's fair. That's another drive I think that one ended in a field goal. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Also, I think this is another important thing to say with this is just like. Colts fans can probably say, like, over the last couple of years, the Colts have gotten hit for far less than that on defenseless receiver plays.
Oh, yeah.
Far less.
It was a bad call. They had a bad referee game just based on the interception and that. Again, you can't blame those two things, or the refs on this loss, but it definitely didn't help.
There's also a weird Zach Pascal one where he got tripped, and I kind of felt like it was pass interference even though.
At the end there?
Yeah.
It looked like incidental.
Think so?
Okay. He was hand fighting with the corner in front of him, and then some other guy came up and kind of tripped him on accident. I don't know. I wouldn't have called that either. I'm pretty conservative when it comes to defensive pass interferences and holdings and stuff like that. I think corners have the worst jobs in the NFL, so I don't like to throw the flag very often.
Yeah, normally I'm like that, but also I just like you've seen it enough that you're like, okay, I feel like you would have called that somewhere else.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, my standard is definitely different than the NFL standard, so I agree with you there. But
There was another one, actually, that I saw them call in a Monday night game with Pittman, actually, on a deeper play down the field that the defensive back didn't really play the ball, and he just kind of, like, stood in front of him and let Pittman run into him, and they've called that on other places. Not saying you should, you probably shouldn't, kind of like a charge situation, but... Like, when you see it called elsewhere, it's just kind of annoying how bad the pass interference calls are.
But offensively, I just think, like, skill, like getting you drafted. Remember, they talked about home runs with Taylor. That hasn't happened. Paris Campbell was your big hitter. Didn't happen. T.Y. Hilton hasn't been that guy this year. They've weirdly created explosive plays without explosive athletes.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah, that's good. They've created a lot of explosive passing plays. I don't know if they have any in the running game.
Not in the run game, for sure. But they've done it without really having those like enough a true number. We talked about this. True number one, true number two.
Marcus Johnson is explosive, but he's explosive in like a number four way. He's not explosive in like a go get it all the time.
What he ends up getting is like three or four decent targets a game for like 60 or 70 yards. That's the perfect way to use him. Mm-hmm. You just need two or three other receivers ahead of him.
One thing I think to remember, and I think it's going to get lost a little bit here, is that the opponent does matter, and Baltimore's defense is really good.
Yep.
And so I don't necessarily know that what we saw today from the offense is what it's going to look like on Thursday. Thursdays are tough because it's Thursday. But I don't necessarily know it's what we should expect on Thursday because the Titans are not the Ravens.
God, they're bad on defense.
They gave up 335 passing yards today to a bad Bears offense. And then, like, they're going to play Green Bay. That's also a bad...
Bad defense. When do they run into a good one? Houston's bad. When's the next good defense they face?
Vegas is bad.
Houston again is bad. Jacksonville is bad. Oh, Pittsburgh. Week 16. So we got to wait another...
Is that really the only one left? It might be.
It doesn't matter, guys. They don't have to be good against elite defenses because they barely play them.
They only have to play one more.
that's what we should take out of this game.
Green Bay has one of those defenses that's like pretend. Like I was watching the Thursday night game the other day, and it said Green Bay was like 12th in total yards, and I was like, get out of here. It's just a lie.
Here, I'll beat the Packers. Avoid Jair Alexander. You win.
That's pretty much it. That really is it. It's him. And block Za'Darius Smith.
Yeah. Don't let a pass rush happen. Which again, I'm not really worried about the Smiths against this Colts offensive line pass blocking.
Yeah. You just have to block Za'Darius Smith and avoid Jair Alexander.
Yeah. Wherever Jair is, just be like, we're gonna throw to the other like 2/3 of the field.
The bigger reason, like with the Packers, that we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but it's fun anyway. The bigger reason that the Packers are 12th is because Rodgers controls the football so well.
Yeah. That's
pretty much it.
The LaFleur offense does such a good job of keeping the ball, but before we'll end this soon because again, we don't have to do too much positive stuff because they lost 24-10. Quick shout outs defensively. Pick your guy.
Grover Stewart.
Oh, come on. That was going to be my guy. All right. Go ahead.
I have other ones, but Grover Stewart. Grover Stewart had like the best play I've ever seen.
I was going to say if we should each pick a guy and we could shout him out, and Grover was going to be my guy. That's fine.
Grover Stewart drove Bradley Bozeman back.
And then also ran down
Lamar Jackson on an option, which is.
After almost shoving his lineman into Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it was great. It was unbelievable. He had another tackle for loss today.
Real good.
In addition to that, a lot of what they did in the run game, Grover Stewart's hand is on, even if he didn't make the tackle. Man.
Almost everybody, D-line-wise, flashed. Nico Autry had a really great play for a sack. DeForest Buckner caused
Grover
the fumble.
Grover Stewart is at the point now, and I think because of the position he plays, is going to be cost-effective enough that I feel like they should re-sign him.
Oh, they definitely should re-sign him.
Because I don't think it's going to cost a ton.
Go look at the Eddie Goldman contract. That's the one that it's going to be. Or at least less than that. Eddie did it for a couple of years.
You know, like, I think you can get him for, like, probably in a 3-year deal that's not too big a deal. Like,
it'll be like $30
million. I honestly think you can get him for less than that because he has lack of name recognition. Eddie Goldman's a guy that everybody knows. I mean, you're a guy everybody knows.
Well, he did it for like 2 years before his contract was up. Grover had a good year last year, but he hasn't really exploded until this
year. Yeah, no, Grover's unbelievable this year. It's hard. It's always hard.
If Chris Ballard's going to spend money, it's going to be on the line. So he's probably in luck.
Okay, who's your guy?
I was going to say, you took Grover. It's none of the DBs.
There's another very obvious one.
Well, Darius deserves it.
Nope.
He does. He had 15. He had 15 tackles today.
That's not the obvious one. If you're looking for somebody off the radar.
I wasn't looking off the radar. I just had two defensive guys.
Oh, okay. You could take Darius then, but I have to come back with my other one.
Well, now I'm trying to think of who you're thinking of. On the D-line?
Yeah.
Taylor Stallworth had a nice day.
He's a very good, like, August signing. I mean, you're not going to get a lot out of that 8th, 9th tackle position, but he does. He gets like 1 or 2 plays a game in 15 snaps.
Danico broke your like he only gets 2 sacks every 4
That's
games.
True.
He got one today. He's leading the team now with 5.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to go with Justin, are you?
No. Al-Qadeen Muhammad.
Oh, Al-Qadeen, that's right. He made a great play. I forgot about that play.
He had two in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had an unbelievable 2 plays. He had a tackle for loss on one play, and then he. Basically, he did the thing that you're not supposed to be able to do. He just ran Lamar Jackson down in the open field by himself. It's great.
He did the thing on that play, which was he literally got past this guy and then stayed directly in his rush lane so that when Lamar did that little spin to boot out, he was like, nope, yep. I'm right here. And he's also way more – Muhammad was a little like faster than I thought he was.
Yeah.
That was pretty good in open space.
100%. No. Well, the other thing he did was a lot of times when guys get up against Lamar, they try to break down.
Right.
And the problem with breaking down is – You've given Lamar the chance to make a move on you. When you just keep attacking, he doesn't have time to settle himself. What he did.
If Lamar had made him miss, Muhammad would have run like 15 yards past. So that's how fast he was going already. So it just worked out that he timed it.
He took away some of the opportunity to make that move.
That was a great play. The defensive line was just great. I mean, we've named Nico, DeForest had the fumble, like Grover.
Darius was unbelievable.
Darius was incredible.
Darius was really, really good today.
Anthony Walker dropped a sure pick, by the way. That one.
Linebacker hands.
They've dropped a lot of picks this year. Xavier dropped one. Bobby's dropped one, though he didn't have his thumb, which is not fair. He has a thumb.
They're gonna need to be
more opportunistic.
Because some of these offenses they're facing, they're gonna have to.
You can't drop Aaron Rodgers picks. If you get a gift, you got to take it.
Because they come along like once every 7 games.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting on a short week. I think the really hard thing about losing this game is it's not so much that you lost the Ravens.
Yeah.
It's that you lost and then you have to go to Tennessee on Thursday.
Yeah.
The schedule makers, this is just a really brutal three game stretch. I mean, Tennessee coming home isn't quite as big a deal. And you do get 10 days before you play the Packers, but knowing what the Packers are right now in terms of offensively, this is just a brutal three-game stretch.
Colts could really use a healthy T.Y. Hilton. I know, again, there's been a lot of people dumping on T.Y. Hilton, but you could have used him out there today. They could definitely use him against Tennessee. They need a legit target against Tennessee.
Tennessee's going to be interesting because Tennessee is just hemorrhaging passing yards, and they can't get a pass rush. They had 3 sacks today, but it was against the Bears. And
doesn't count. The offensive line, we all had COVID.
Yeah.
Or bad.
Yeah, so that doesn't count. Like, Tennessee has not rushed the passer at all, and they haven't stopped anybody in the pass at all. So,
well, let me just start you there. I mean, we're just about the end here. Is it a Tennessee win? I'm sorry, yeah, Colts win or a Tennessee win Thursday night? Where are you at right now? You could with reserving the right to change in the next few days.
I like the Colts matchup against Tennessee. I really do, because they're so good against the run,
yep.
And I just don't – I can't stand Tennessee's defense this year.
I agree. So they're going to score enough points to outscore – because Tennessee will score some, so they're going to outscore enough points to outscore Tennessee.
Yeah. The only hesitation I have with this game is it's Thursday, and who knows?
Thursdays are weird. Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna stay with you. I think it's a Colts win, which, again, would be huge, because if they go 5-4, people are going to start jumping off the ship. And
they just did already.
Nah.
They absolutely – well, I should say the people who respond to us on Twitter jumped off
the ship. They're going to wake up tomorrow morning and go, you know what? They lost to the Ravens. They were going to lose to the Ravens.
I don't think they will. If I've learned anything about the Colts fan base this year, it's that every loss is the worst thing that ever happened.
Be nice. They're listening to our podcast right now, Joel.
I'm just pointing out the way they are.
I know. But every fan base is, to be fair. Everybody likes to jump off. Unless you're
maybe.
Winningest team of all time.
Oh, no, that's a good point.
Patriots, like...
Yeah, their fans are insane.
Tom Brady would have, like, 2 bad games. They're he's dead, it's over, get rid of him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm giving you that one. Yeah, 100%. So, the Patriots are the best example there because they just... And actually, this is a different sport. But, as a Spurs fan, as a lifelong San Antonio Spurs fan...
Yeah.
The Spurs fan base has been doing this the last, like, 3 or 4 years, too.
Pop, too? They were hearing
like Pop.
See, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Like, Pop's, like the best basketball coach in the last 20 years has just lost it. Like,
oh, I saw somebody saying Belichick is 7 years old, might be over for him now. And I was like, are you stopping? Just stop. Come on.
Just don't have talent.
Ugh. They'll probably win that division somehow.
No, that's a good point. I apologize to Colts fans. You're right. Every fan base is like this.
They're miserable.
The only ones that aren't like this...
Everyone's miserable.
The only ones that aren't like this are the ones who just have, like, followed a bad team for so long...
Correct.
...that they're just numb to it all.
Like, Chargers fans today, they're like, yeah.
Right.
This is our life.
Right. Like, they're mad for, like, they're mad at the call for, like, 5 minutes, and then they're like...
We were never winning that game.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's where, yeah, you're right. Some fans have accepted their fates.
Yeah.
Like Cleveland Browns fans in general just assume something's going to go terrible.
Yeah, there's 20 years of Milwaukee Brewers fandom in my history that's like that. Where you're just, they're like, it's like June and they're out of it and you're like,
yeah.
Maybe Jeff Jenkins will hit 30 homers this year.
Yeah, you look at the box score the next day, you're like, okay, great. Yeah, it was all right. All right, well, that'll be it for us on the Cover 2 podcast. We appreciate you guys listening. Joel, yeah, you wrote a story about how great the defense was. I wrote a story about how bad the offense was, essentially. Greg Doyle probably, I think, did the same thing. I haven't read him yet, but I'm sure he fired some shots.
His first tweet was the Colts' offense blows. So
blows.
I think he might have gone even further.
He did say blows, which is something. So anyway, that's what we wrote this week. We did a cool numbers thing, too. And then, yeah. You have a cool defense. I'm not going to give it away anymore, but you have a cool defense story coming out this week, I think.
Yes. I'm writing lots of defense.
We should, because it makes us happy, because it's actually a nice thing. So, all right. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you probably Wednesday.
Probably.
A day earlier than usual because of this weird Thursday night madness.
To preview the Titans game, and we'll see if I come around on the Titans at all.
And
but the answer is no.
Look forward to, like, slap happy Joel and Jim at, like, 1 in the morning after the Nashville game.
Oh,
after
yeah,
the Titans
this is
game.
The only one we're going to have this year, too.
So, yeah. We're both going, so it'll be a weird, like, just, I'm not going to say drunken, but exhausted hotel room
it'll
podcast. Yeah,
it'll
be bad. So look forward to those takes.
We're driving there that day, too.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, see you guys later.